All right, welcome back here to Beyond the Lights. I'm your host, Pat Doherty, alongside Ian Nielsen. Glad to be back. Glad to continue. We started this a little while ago, Ian, but a little bit of a reboot. Family life gets crazy. But I'm excited. I'm excited to get back behind the mic, have a little bit of conversation. Today we're going to have an interesting topic. This is a topic I've kind of wanted to pick the brain of Ian for a while. First and foremost, hi. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Glad again to be here with you talking about some things outside of life. That's what Beyond the Lights is all about. This is a podcast purely put towards all the things outside of sports, outside of life that sometimes we don't want to talk about, or at least maybe don't feel comfortable talking about. And Ian's here as well to give the perspective and the life lessons that he's been through. We've both been through very different things, but struggles at times. Both have an athlete mentality, a management mentality as well from a working place. But this is all about different issues that we deal with on a daily basis and how to try to work through those. Today's topic is fear. Fear is an interesting topic, Ian. It's one of those things where I think today's society has moved towards the fact that we don't want to talk about any of these quote-unquote issues such as being vulnerable, which is what I feel like fear leads you to. And we all know that there's different types of fear. There's obviously phobias and those type of things, but fear is, to me, one of the only emotions that can leave you paralyzed. Like, people actually become paralyzed because of their fear. And one of the reasons I want to talk about this today is I was told years ago by a gentleman that I worked with that was devout in his faith, and he told me that you shouldn't fear anything. You should turn all your fears towards God and allow him to take that fear away from you. And I struggle with this because I think fear can be a very positive thing and can be used in a manner that can lead to success. I'm the type of person, I don't think hiding from your fear is a good thing. And I think that one of the issues people have that makes fear become an even bigger issue is the fact that they don't talk about it and they don't admit it. If you don't admit that you're afraid of something, it's not going to get better. If you don't admit you have a problem, you can't fix your problem, right? And so I want to start there. I know that you're very versed in scripture, and let's start right there. What does God say about fear? And what is your take on, should you say, God will take care of it?
Yeah. Well, first, I mean, if on a very large scale, if we're trying to be like Christ or be like God, the question is he ever fearful?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say no, but it's in the term of fear as in something's bigger than what he can't handle. So I'm going to label fear in the scope of, we feel that whatever circumstance or whatever situation, whatever item, person, whatever it is a danger that is bigger than your God.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore you put more, I don't know, confidence, or you put more power to the item over than the God in which could help you get past that. And at that point you have anxiety. You feel like you don't have control. You don't feel like positive outcome is actually coming your way. You have a fear, or you have a confidence that negative outcomes are coming your way. And so if God is all knowing, all good, all loving, his expectation is going to be that it's always going to be getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even the verse, I believe it's 1 John 4:18, talks about how perfect love casts out fear. And then, you know, there's other verses back in, especially in the Old Testament, where it talks about how it says fear of, you know, having fear of the Lord as in a good way, in a good sense. And, you know, trying to put context on fear is very important. And what I mean by that is perfect love casts all, you know, all fear. That's in the light of, you know, love is going to make you feel completely, accepted and completely at home, completely cared for. And when you're cared for and you feel accepted for who you are, you don't have to be concerned that negative consequences or negative outcomes are coming your way from at least the person or the individual God that's giving you that love, that's giving you that care. So if I have fear of the Lord, mm-hmm. it's more, I think, in the line of respect. So, you know, if I see a cop, you know, in a car next to me and I'm driving, I can have a healthy fear. And a healthy fear looks as in I all of a sudden become more aware of what I'm doing because I respect his authority. I'm not necessarily fearful of the man, you know, to hurt me or anything mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
But I realize that he carries authority in which makes me check what I'm doing in that moment.
So, and I think that's a good point because we look at fear as a way of survival too. I mean, there's some people that have fear of heights. I mean, if you're high in the sky, it's natural to feel, you know, concerned about falling and harming yourself. I wanted to bring this up because one of the fears I struggled with for the majority of my adult life, and until recently when I've tried to get back into faith and into the church and really focus on that side of my personality, I had a fear of death for the longest time because and ultimately because I didn't know what that meant. Like, death is so final if you don't believe in God or an afterlife. And I don't want to limit it to just God, but if you have a belief of there is more to life than the living portion. And I mean, there would be times I'd wake up and have extreme anxiety. You almost call it a panic attack because I would have this worry of when that happens, what's next? And not only that, but the leaving of my family, my children, my wife, those type of things. And it's gotten better as I've moved towards, you know, understanding that there's a next realm. There's obviously heaven if I'm lucky enough for that by the way that I live my life. But the other side of it is the fact that I don't look at it as a final, it's over, it's done. And I have faith that something better is coming from that. I guess the thing for me is like, there's a lot of people that believe that same thing, that is an anxiety. And is that tied to fear? Is it worth even wasting time on?
Yeah. I mean, I think there is an aspect of fear there, for sure. Cause it's kind of like, there was a C.S. Lewis quote and I'm going to butcher it, but, essentially he was talking about how we are a species that's too easily pleased, that we get caught up in pleasures of life when infinite joy and infinite love is at our right hand available, from the loving Father.
Mm-hmm.
And as you think about that, it's like, it's, if we really took the view of heaven, where let's say it's perfection, it's everything of freedom and love captured into a culture, into an environment. And if we were to really engage that place, how would we actually view our existence here? We'd probably view it as very a lot lower level living, almost like you would go to a third world country in the slum and be like, oh my gosh, you know, this is a very sad place and sad level of living.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that you don't have hope to try to make it better. I mean, that's why there's ministries and different organizations working on that. Because they have this joy and the hope of bringing it to a higher level of living. So I think that's the same view of heaven. But mind you, I also think that that's what creates, that can allow us to feel like there's less fear. I mean, think about it this way too. And we have people always flooding to the United States for the American dream. They have this huge hope that gets them through the crazy circumstances that they're living in, wherever else they're living,
mm-hmm.
because they have hope. So if we had that same perspective of heaven and where we're going, we wouldn't view death as we wouldn't fear it. We'd almost look to it as an opportunity to actually experience the love of the Father.
That's wow. That's good stuff. You said hope and I'm glad you did, because I think that hope is the other side of fear.
Correct.
And I do want to touch on vulnerability at some point during this podcast, because especially from a leadership standpoint, I think that's big and something that a lot of leaders, a lot of coaches I know have struggled with, because there's a macho mentality to being in a leadership role, whether it's a female or a male. I've always seen more side of that than I've seen a side of understanding, caring, and vulnerability. But I want to touch on hope for a little bit, because obviously a couple of years ago, it's a lot longer than a couple of years ago, but Barack Obama ran his entire campaign on that simple phrase of hope and change. And when you're in a tough place, and whether it's fear or, like you mentioned, if you're struggling with where you're at and you're trying to get to a place that's better, hope is a driving force. But we love to romanticize hope, but yet not talk about fear. And for me, again, I go back to my original statement. I think fear is a good thing. And you've hit on a couple of different topics that I think also support that. But admitting first that you're fearful and owning that, I think, is something that a lot of people struggle with. I know I have in certain aspects of my life. There's been times where I've struggled to admit things. And I'll go back to the fact, growing up, I didn't have either one of my biological parents, and then my adopted father and mother divorced. And I can remember my friend Brett Bigler in the fourth grade, the first time that I actually admitted that I was from a divorced family. It's a different time back then. I mean, this is probably late 90s, mid 90s. But at the same time, like, I thought that he would stop being my friend. I was fearful that if people found out that I could never be successful, I would not have friends. And that was the first lesson when I did that. And he was like, oh, okay, we're going to go play some football. Like, he didn't care at all, but it was a legitimate fear of mine. And until I admitted that was a situation, and then realized, hey, there's some good that can come out of this, like, he was able to support me through some things. But where do we start with the admittance first and the strength to do that? Especially, I want your thoughts on somebody that has nobody else, because there are people that don't. They don't have anybody they feel like they can go to and have conversations like we're having right now.
Yeah, that's it. So first, I mean, I would put fear in line with a symptom of your spirit, so, or soul for that matter. So, I mean, it's kind of like if you had cancer, or if you had, you know, let's say a disease in general. I don't want to necessarily lump it into cancer, but you're going to have symptoms. Mm-hmm. So let's say all of a sudden you get a cold, might start with a, you know, itchy, scratchy throat. And you're going to know it's there, but you're like, eh, it's okay. Like, we'll see how this, you know, develops. And then eventually it becomes your sinuses are all clogged up. Right. And then eventually you might get some medicine. And I see fear in the same light of those kind of symptoms leading to an actual disease. And in that, it's like, you were not designed to fear in your life. You weren't designed to be fearful. You've been given the Bible talks about giving you a spirit of power and love and self-control, and not fear. So if that's what we've been designed to do, then fear a lot of times is a symptom of a belief or a perception that might not be aligned with heaven. Why? Because is heaven fearful? No.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if that's the case, then there could be, it's to me a symptom of, man, where's my perspective right now? And for people who don't have someone else to go to, right, don't have someone else to talk to, that's very, very hard, because we were designed not to be alone, but to be in community for these reasons. You know, we live in family. Family is a lot about the maturity of each other. So you have your fathers and you have your mothers, the grandparents, and that's all for the maturity of the grandkids and the kids of the family. And so when you have that family unit focused on the maturity of those that are in the family, then you have growth. But if you have no family that's focused on individuals that they're alone, then maturity will be definitely stunted.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were not designed for that. So again, I think fear is a byproduct of not being fully aligned to who you were designed to be. And it's a symptom that we must then be very vulnerable about, because if I don't, you know, go to the doctor for certain symptoms, it could be too late. And I haven't, and now all of a sudden I have a deathly illness I didn't know about, because it's stage 4, stage 5 cancer. And I could have gotten this done and figured out if I just would have addressed the symptoms right away. So that's how I kind of view fear.
I like that analogy as well. And symptoms can be treated, as you mentioned. So there's a lot of different ways. And I believe that sharing and finding your path to to eliminating that as a must, because it can, as we know, it can be paralyzing. It can really, it can control your entire life, and then it can stunt, as you said, your maturity, but your success, not only as a person, but the opportunity to create that community, that family, because you can ostracize yourself from that environment. Vulnerability. And this is something I've heard, you know, it's weird because coming from a sports background, it's something that I go back to the macho mentality of an athlete. You don't want to be vulnerable. You don't want to be in a situation where you feel you're not in control. But I also, I found in leadership and in coaching that if you open up, if you allow yourself to be vulnerable in some situations, share a story with an employee, a teammate, a coworker, sometimes that can allow them to feel more comfortable and open up to you as well. And you can find that, the reason I bring this up is because I've found that this has happened on multiple occasions where I'll simply express a life lesson or something that I've gone through, a hardship that I've gone through, and find out that there's somebody that I'm working with that is silently going through the same thing. And not saying that I can fix what they're going through, but just them knowing that they have somebody that they can come to and say, hey, I'm actually dealing with that, or I dealt with that. I recently gave a speech at a breakfast not too long ago, and I talked about the fact that my biological father, who I didn't have a lot of interaction with when I was young, that wasn't negative or abusive, and he signed the rights away to me when I was about 3.5 years old for a cash sum, and I struggled with that for a long time. And recently, I found out that he was dying, and I struggled with the fact of, there's obviously questions that I wanted answered. I never believed that I'd ever get the right answer. And I said this in the speech because the night before I'd found out that he was basically on his deathbed. He wasn't going to make it. A blood clot had reached his brain. And at that point, there's nothing they could really do. And then he passed away and I felt numb and I didn't know why. The hardest thing for me is like, I still feel numb to it. I don't feel sadness. I don't feel any pain anymore, but I do feel like there's an emptiness. There's obviously some finality to staring at somebody and asking that the questions that I wanted and getting an answer, whether it was the one I wanted to hear or not. And somebody came up to me after, and for me that was huge. That was a vulnerability of expressing that feeling at that moment. And a lady came up to me afterwards and said, you know, it's weird. I went through the exact same thing, and I know exactly how you're feeling. And she didn't go talk to her father either. But it's just little things like that. And I feel like in our society today, and you can correct me if you think otherwise, we don't, whether it's as individuals, leaders or coaches or team captains or, anything along those lines, just being a person in general, that we have created this realm of, you don't want to show any weakness because weakness is such a negative thing. Somebody's going to come along and exploit that. And I fight back because I think there's a lot of good people out there, and there's a lot of people that if you do allow yourself to potentially show weakness or vulnerability or express something you've gone through, there's a lot of good that can come from it and very little negativity.
Yeah, I think the key is what you're thinking about how culture and other leaders define strengths and weaknesses and what is supposed to be entailed there. Because as you were saying, some individuals might see vulnerability as a weakness, mm-hmm. right? And it's weakness because then it comes up as, well, you might not have it together. So if you don't have it together, then how can I even follow you? And I think vulnerability should be more seen as in the same lens or sentence of authenticity. So vulnerability is like, hey, I'm allowing you to see all the facets of myself without any reservation. And I think that there is a healthy amount of reservation. We see it in the Bible where Jesus, you know, picks his select few to be his inner circle, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is a level of wisdom in deciding who's going to be truly in your inner circle. But that doesn't mean that you are just very reserved and almost a lack of engagement with individuals, because it stunts care and it stunts love from actually being given. And so I think the other side of it is that being vulnerable can lead to an open door for a lot of investment in people, because vulnerability allows, again, you to be you and me to be me and us in a relationship. And when that happens, people are very, very hungry to then get any life from you or any, you know, perspective to help them. Mm-hmm. And that can cause a lot of time and energy to be given to an individual who might not have that. And because they're going to be hungry for that, and they're going to be really wanting to draw that out of you, which is awesome, because at the end of the day, that's what I would probably say we all want to do, is to change people's lives for the better. So we must prioritize that. But we also must be very selective and very aware of how much time we can invest with our own priorities. So it's tough, because there's, I would contend, like you've already mentioned, there's a lot of people out there that might not have the family or the people to go to that's going to be able to kind of give them a lot of life into the issues that they're dealing with. So once we open ourselves up as leaders and be vulnerable, we can get a flood of people coming our way to try to gain insight and to get some help, which open door for me is great to have that. But also the amount of time I can invest is gotta be something I keep aware of. So what happens is I think people as leaders then say, you know something, it's a lot easier not to be vulnerable and to try to delegate so I can continue on my path. But I think what that does is it creates distance that's not healthy. And it can look as if we're not making, you know, quick decisions because we're taking a little bit too long to be vulnerable and to think a little bit more than just on the surface.
And I think too, not to just tag this to leadership or, as I mentioned, coaches, mentors, whoever, I think individuals in general, especially team members, whether you're in a workplace, teammates, whether you're playing on an organized team, the same thing. I think that builds chemistry, and we hear it all the time in sports. Why is the less talented team, you know, winning? I just the other night, last night, you had Minnesota Duluth win the national championship for NCAA hockey, and everything said that they shouldn't even have been there. They barely got into the tournament, but why were they able to make a run? A lot of it's chemistry. Trust and faith in the people around you. You don't build that without breaking down some walls, or at least as an individual, taking down the wall yourself and allowing your teammate, whether it's a, and I love the analogy that a family is a team as well. And so whether that's with your spouse or your kids, those areas as well. All right, I want to circle back real quick. I know we mentioned it a little bit earlier and then we got on vulnerability, but I wanted to go back to hope. And you had touched on that as being the other side of fear. And I wanted to get your thoughts, though, too, is the fact that hope is not really an action. It's not fluid. You're not doing anything when you're hoping, except for you're hoping. To me, what is the action part of that? And in your opinion, as you can hope that you want to be successful in life, whatever that means to you. And I even think that sometimes we have these broad dreams, which is great, but if we don't have a concrete plan and we don't break it down into steps, if we don't create a path for ourselves to get there, it's simple. If you look at wanting to be successful in finances, right, and create wealth for you, you have to take steps to do so, create a budget, plan, have goals, have points that you're going to set along the way. Same thing in whatever career it is. And the thing is, in a lot of our work or sports or whatever, a lot of that's out of our hands, right? You can be the best baseball player that you are. You can have a great year. And ultimately, if you get moved up, that's not your choice. That's somebody else. Somebody else has to make that decision. In business, it's the same way. I mean, you can work your butt off. You're never late. You work hard every day. You get to work and you're up for promotion. Somebody else is, and they choose the other person. There's nothing you can do about that. But to me, hope is great. Hope is something that we need, but how do we turn hope into action?
Yeah. So just as like it kind of goes with fear and hope, and we say they're the opposites of each other, but if you have fear, let's say you're fearful of heights, then you're probably never going to jump out of a plane. So that fear actually directs, most likely, more than not, your action. So hope, let's say you're hopeful of, a better future for your family. That may look like you working harder at work and focusing more of your attention at work to create more wealth so that you guys can, you know, get a house or, you know, go on that vacation and spend the time that you guys want to spend together. So it's the hopeful expectation of where you're going, which is going to allow your actions to follow suit. So if I'm hopeful of, you know, let's say the kingdom of God coming to earth one day, but that I know that I'm a part of that plan, then I'm actually going to be focused upon how do I make lives better every day, knowing that my hope is one day that it's going to continue to get better and the kingdom of God will come. So if my end view time or if my expectation of the world was negative, I don't have as much, I guess, urgency to actually create a better environment around me, because I just assume it's always going to get worse. So what's the chances of me actually making it better then if it's really always going to get worse? And that, again, is a part, the power of hope allows you to actually operate action in line with where your hope's going.
Good stuff, good stuff. That's going to wrap up this week's Beyond the Lights podcast. Next week, we will be talking about living life by priorities. And Ian, I have a great quote. Are you living by design or are you living by chance? And that's something we'll talk about next week here on Beyond the Lights. Again, if you have a topic you would like us to touch base on, or if you simply want to reach out to either Ian or I, you can find us on Facebook at Beyond the Lights and send us a message, and we'll get back to you as quickly as we can. Until next week, again, this is Beyond the Lights. I'm Pat Doherty along with Ian Nielsen. We'll see you next week.